you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays, and very close to a very happy new year. 2019 is almost over, Josh.
It's crazy.
This one passed by faster than normal. Normally it's like, oh, I can't believe it's already December. And this time it's like, oh my gosh, it's December.
It's crazy. It's almost 2020. So we do this show every year or some version of it, which is the look back at the previous year. And we like to talk about the cards that came out, the things that happened, everything in the world of Magic.
Yep.
As usual, it's 12 months. It's a 12-month period and a lot has happened.
A lot, yeah. And next year, I think, is going to be even more. But I was surprised going through and making this list just how much changed this year. So this is our hindsight is 2019. It almost had the perfect ring to it. But you're going to have to wait 12 more months. So please stay subscribed to the channel if you haven't already. But before we get into it, well, it's been a great year for Magic and a great year for a lot of new cards, of which we're going to talk about some of them today, including our best picks for, you know, our favorites. So if you want to pick up any of those cards, now is your chance to finally do so before 2020. Go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. They've got all your singles, sealed products, board games, card games, you name it. Card Kingdom has a lot in their catalog, and they ship really quickly, maybe just in time for that New Year's party as well. Who knows?
They have a cube that you can buy that's ready-made. They have a draft set that they recently designed called Lumeria. Card Kingdom has a ton of different stuff, so definitely, you're going to buy Magic cards anyway.
Yes.
Just use that affiliate link when you do. You're helping us out and all of our content. And our other sponsor, which sponsors all of our content and really helps make it great, is Ultra Pro. They provide all the playmats, the deck boxes, the sleeves, everything you need to keep all your gaming pieces safe, in good condition, looking really, really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Ultra Pro makes the Eclipse sleeves, which are the best in the market. They make all the themed playmats and everything else. Definitely, if you want to spice up your battlefield, Ultra Pro, they make the best in the biz.
It's been a whole year, and not a single card of mine has gotten dinged, thanks to Ultra Pro products.
You know, I can say this. I have not had to re-sleeve an entire deck this year because the sleeves like tore or got worn out. The Eclipse sleeves, I think we talked about a lot last year when they first came out. I re-sleeved all my decks in the Eclipse sleeves. They're still all in those same Eclipse sleeves, which is pretty nuts.
I've been using the same Eclipse sleeves to draft with for approximately 2 years now.
Yeah, it's crazy.
2 years, people. All right.
And the final way to support all of our content is directly if you go to patreon.com/commandzone. You get all kinds of really cool perks, one of which is you get to watch our game nights episodes a day early before anybody out there in the general public gets to see it. Also, if you're at the correct tier level, you can chat with Jimmy and I on our Discord server, which we're on each and every single day.
Not just that, it's a vibrant community. Yeah. You can post a deck in there and you can get 20, 30 people all being like, I like this, I want this. Or
have
you
thought about this card?
Yeah, which is awesome.
And also, we shout out one lucky patron every single episode, and this episode is dedicated to Brian Sierakowski. Brian, you rock.
That's a cool name.
All right, so our main topic, the 2019 year in review, also says in parentheses here, come up with better title.
All right, moving on to the listeners, what do you think was a better title for this episode?
We found that the year in review title doesn't tend to get a lot of clicks. So we'll probably have come up with something different than that on this episode.
Absolutely.
Maybe like one of the mini topics.
You know, if I asked Josh, like, hey, Josh, walk me through what happened last year, we'd probably just miss everything. There's so much that happened. It's nuts.
Yeah. When putting together this outline, Jimmy, you did the first pass. I sort of did a pass. And then I was like, I'm sure we're forgetting stuff. So we went to the whole team and I was like, hey, what happened in Magic this year? What cards do you like? And it's easy to forget a lot of the stuff, especially stuff that happened in the first half of the year. You're like, wait, that was this year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess let's just talk through it.
Yeah. Let's start with the set releases. So in January, we had Ravnica Allegiance came out. it was some of the notable cards in there were the Shocklands, the second half of them. The first half had been in Gilded Ravnica.
Correct.
Our preview card, Prime Speaker Vanifar, almost certainly the most powerful commander in that set, but not the most popular, which warms my heart, actually.
Yeah, me too. I'm very glad.
Guardian Project, Wilderness Reclamation, Electro Dominance, and Smothering Tithe also in that set.
See, that's really what's going to keep the trophy for me. That was it. Smothering Tithe.
Can you believe that Smothering Tithe has only been in the commander format for not even a full year now? Because I feel like I see it all the time.
It's true. I've seen it all the time.
Yeah, It like got into the format and got in every deck very quickly.
Yeah, you know, EDHREC recently posted this amazing graph showing commanders over time and how they've spiked in popularity. Yeah. And when Atraxa came out, went whoosh right to the top. And Smothering Tithe, I think, has the same effect.
Yeah, if they did that for cards in the 99, it would have just been Smothering Tithe just would have come out of nowhere and been like, boom, in the top spot immediately. Yeah.
White horse, I guess, in this case. The next set that came out was in April. Oh, by the way, that was the game that I came back for, right? After my break, I think.
Was that the first one? Yeah, you're right. Yeah. It was with DJ and Vinny.
Yes. Okay, War of the Spark came out in April. And that one, the notable cards were Liliana, the crazy new Planeswalker, the Finale Cycle, which I haven't really seen much of in Commander, the God Eternal Cycle, which we also got excited about, but also hasn't really made a huge splash, Narset Potter of Veils.
Unfortunately, has made a huge splash. I see that card way too much.
Yeah, Jace, Wielder of Mysteries, another Lab Man, Niv-Mizzet Reborn, and of course there was the awesome alternate art Japanese Planeswalkers that were all done by famous anime artists.
You know, I have three booster boxes of that Japanese in my, because my girlfriend happened to go to Japan on vacation without me during this time period, and she got me three boxes over there.
Nice. I got two.
I need to crack them open. It seems like...
Do you?
Yeah, it seems like...
Sure, I guess you can't really draft it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know when I'm ever going to crack them open, but that's got to be what they're for, because you're right. It's a Japanese. We can't draft it.
I mean, your girlfriend does have amazing luck opening boosters.
Maybe we should do an unboxing video.
Yeah, we haven't done one of those.
At least one of those.
In 3-4 years.
Yeah, a couple years. If you'd like to see that, let us know.
And of course, Planeswalkers for the first time at Uncommon War of the Spark, so... Plenty of those.
Quite a set. I really enjoyed the draft set for War of the Spark. I thought the draft environment was fun, even though that wasn't an opinion necessarily shared by everybody out there, but I had a lot of fun with it.
I thought Sealed was bad, but draft was fun.
Yeah, I agree. The next set was Core Set 2020. This had the Leyline. You put Leyline of the Void on here, really?
Well, I mean, it got...
Anticipation!
All right. Void was the one that people were like, I can't put up my deck.
You're right. It's an expensive card.
and there's no 4-mana artifact that does the exact same thing as it, right?
Yeah, that's the point. Okay, fair enough. Leyline of the Void, Chandra, Awakened Inferno, Yaruk, the Desecrated.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good core set as far as for Commander, as far as in comparison to other core sets.
That's a theme that we're going to see recur across the entirety of all the set releases, is that in every set, there's at least one or two cards where you're like, nice, that's great for Commander.
Yeah, usually a lot more than that.
Yeah. After that was Throne of Eldraine in September, which seems like yesterday, honestly. I can't believe it's also the last set of the year. But in that one, we have very notably Oko, Thief of Crowns, who went ahead and just got his butt banned everywhere.
We can still play him in Commander.
Yes. Not as good. Korvold, Faecurist King.
One's pretty good.
Yeah, especially when you see Reed Duke piloting it. Chulainn, Teller of Tales, Alila, Artful Provocateur, Fabled Passage, finally a fetch land for basics. And the Great Henge / Embercleave / that whole cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they released these special collector boosters, and they had all those different art variants.
Oh yeah, we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but that was they're always experimenting. How about that?
Yeah. And if you don't remember, in the fall set for, I think it was the year after that, is when they introduced Expeditions for the first time. So the fall set seems like where
Battle
they're like,
Zendikar.
Yeah, like, hey, let's try something new and big out and make a splash.
There were some special sets last year, or what do they call them? Ancillary products?
I don't know. The sets that aren't Conspiracy 3?
Not Master sets, because they stopped doing those, but this was very similar. So it was Modern Horizons, which came out in June. This was not a Master set because it wasn't all reprints. So they did have a bunch of new cards that were designed specifically for Modern, but also a lot of good Commander stuff in there. So we got Force of Negation, the new Urza, which was our preview card, Prismatic Vista, another fetch land. The draw card, land cycle.
Horizon Canopy cycle getting finished, basically.
Yawgmoth, Thrawn Physician, First Sliver, Morophon the Boundless, Unbound Flourishing, Ayula, Bear Force One. That was a cool one.
Definitely not the flashiest card in the set, but I think it was actually on Reddit, one of the top posts of the entire year, just because people were like, finally, it is the Bear Commander.
Also, I want to say that that Game Nights episode, as far as trajectory, is our most popular of all time.
Oh, just because it keeps...
As far as views it has at this point compared to other videos, I think the Jacob episode is second, and then the... The Prof and Melissa one is up there. And also the first Kenji episode with Gabby is also very high on that list.
Nice.
Not that I look at our analytics all the time.
No, who would do that? Not that they give you all of the data as well.
So what do you think about Modern Horizons, everybody out there? Was it really Commander Horizons as dubbed by the community? I think it's hard to say that because Commander Legends is coming out.
True.
Which is basically Commander Horizons.
Yeah, the one thing that's very obvious is that... Everyone at WotC, R&D-wise, has to be just constantly having a little thing in their brain going like, and Commander gets,
yeah,
and Commander gets.
And next year, we get a whole set.
Yeah.
In fact, I think I'm allowed to say this. When I first drafted Commander Legends...
Right. At testing it, Josh went up to WotC.
Yeah, I was at WotC. They were calling it Commander Horizons at that point.
Oh.
So there you go.
It's okay. No one's...
At that point, I didn't know Modern Horizons existed, so I didn't know there was even a Horizons thing. So I was like, Horizons, okay.
Horizons, okay,
I
don't know. Yeah, yeah. That's a Magic-esque word.
Yeah.
As far as Commander goes, we just got one set this year, like usual. That's, of course, changing next year, but the Commander 2019 set saw what I thought was one of the best balanced decks to play against each other.
Yeah.
And in terms of cards that were notable, Kirik. Son of Yawgmoth, definitely the biggest splash there. And Dockside Extortionist, ramp in mono red.
That's a really cool card. They reprinted Seedborn Muse.
Yep.
They've reprinted a couple times in the last few years. So this is a card that has gotten a lot more affordable, which is good because it's very, very powerful and strong. Yeah, I agree with you that the Commander product this year, I thought, was one of their better products. As far as those decks out of the box, they did a specific thing. They were very individual. They didn't feel like the other decks.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that the set, as far as like all the new cards in the set, it was hard. Like, look at the list. We've got like three or four cards we're mentioning here, whereas for some of the other sets, we were mentioning like 6, 7, 8, 9 cards.
Yeah, especially Modern Horizon specifically.
Yeah, although there was a bunch of legendary creatures that we're not talking about here. Maybe we'll mention some when we talk about what we think the best new legendary commander of the year were.
Well, that's one of those things that sneaks up on you too.
Yeah.
Maybe we find out that the Pramacon, the wall that makes you attack people, is just like the best control finisher there ever was. I don't know. Probably not.
I played with against a Pramacon deck just the other night because Kyle came with his buddy who edits. Yeah, and he had a pretty sweet Pramacon deck. So, all right, moving on. They was this the first year they did this, or this is a continuation? Did they have Mythic Edition last year? I forget.
I think they had one before.
Guilds of Ravnica.
Guilds of Ravnica is where it started, yeah.
So they continued the Mythic Edition thing for a couple of sets here. And Mythic Edition was this super high-end special booster box, and it accompanied a set. So they did one for Ravnica Allegiance and War of the Spark. And what it was is you get 24 packs in the booster box, but 16 of the packs are normal, mm-hmm. but 8 of the packs are not. And in those 8 packs, they were colored differently, they looked differently, and they would each have a specific chase card, promo card in them. So was it War of the Spark had the Planeswalkers?
Planeswalkers,
and that one people went nuts for because it had Ugin, it had Tezzeret.
Yeah,
all the
original really powerful Planeswalkers in Commander.
So the value of that one was sky high. The Ravnica Allegiance one, not quite as popular, but what happened...
That was the least popular one of the three, yeah.
Did you get a War of the Spark Mythic Edition?
No, we all tried.
We all were in the office like click, 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 reload, try and type in the thing.
And for a hot second.
Thought we got it.
We got them.
Yeah, thought we got it. Like, it gave me, you got the confirmation of like.
Yep. Full on confirmation.
Yeah,
email
order successful, email confirmation, everything. And then we found out like a few weeks later when we got these uncut sheets.
As reconciliation.
So, yeah. So what
reparations, I suppose.
So what happened is they oversold because eBay, they did it through eBay. I think it was an eBay problem. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay, look. We can talk about it later. Keep going.
Well, I'm just saying, like, they only had X amount to sell. I forget what the number was. It was like 12,000 or whatever, and they accidentally sold 40,000. And so 28,000 people, I just made up those numbers, but it's something around that.
Yeah, a lot of people did not get this.
And were mad and had gotten confirmation that they were going to get it. And so they sent out these War of the Spark foil uncut sheets to people as like apology, like, hey, sorry, you're not going to get it. We're going to refund all your money and you just get this thing for free.
Yeah.
Which is pretty nice because those things are worth like it's just like a $100 bill at the very least for free.
And it's a collector thing. A lot of people don't have uncut sheets. Yeah. It's harder to come across.
Here's the thing, though. Then they sent those, and a lot of those were damaged. So people were like sending back to get new ones. So they ended up having to send out like extras of those. And like, yeah, I have one. I have a foil uncut sheet. My girlfriend has one because while I was trying to order it, she was also trying to order it. So we have two foil uncut sheets. We checked them. They're in good condition. They're just sitting there because nobody wants them because there was 40,000 of them out there. In the world.
Maybe you can make your own miscuts, you know? I have mine. I know. We want to know where it is.
Where?
I got it at the door. I opened my door. I knew exactly what it was. And I was like, I don't even want to check if it's busted or not. So I just put it next to the door. And it's literally been still sitting there since July.
Mine's in the closet in our office over here. It's just been sitting there. I checked it, though, to make sure it wasn't damaged. Put it back in and then...
Josh Kim also got one. And he framed it and he put it up. And it actually looks really nice.
I'm sure it would. But I didn't want a
piece. It's a lot of work.
I didn't want a piece of wall art. I wanted, you know, magic cards. Anyway,
to play with.
Yeah, that was some controversy, a thing that happened, and as a result, they sort of changed, and they're not doing Mythic Edition anymore. Or at least they didn't for Throne of Eldraine. Oh wait, I'm skipping one here. So in June, they came out with the signature spellbook Gideon, which is the white signature spellbook. Last year they did blue.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of reprints, different versions, foil and non-foil, similar to what they're going to do for the, what's it called? The Commander Collection.
Commander Collection, yeah, green, which Gavin talked about when he came on the show. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think using eBay as your vendor is just the smart idea, right?
Like, I would think like, hey, it's eBay. They handle a ton of volume. They're going to be able to handle this.
I don't know where the miscommunication happened, but like clearly this was not the ideal way of going about it.
Yeah, I mean... But when they announced it, I was like, okay, they're not doing... Because I think they did earlier Mythic Editions on their own storefront, which was a disaster because the Hasbro storefront is not robust.
And every time they do like the Comic-Con promos and stuff, the site gets
crashes. So then it was like, okay, they're going to use eBay, who must know how to handle this large volume, which clearly didn't work because that thing all went awry.
Yep.
So, okay, we're going to talk about Secret Lair in a second here, which is tied into that too. But let's hit the... other thing that happened in between the spellbook and Secret Lair, which was Throne of Eldraine, they tried something new again, which is the collector's boosters. You talked about it earlier. This was a really ultra premium, high-end, quote-unquote, booster box. It only had 12 packs in it.
Yeah, the box was about yay big. Like,
I think we have one here.
Yeah, it was really interesting because I was with Mark Rosewater when they previewed this. There was a stream that we talked about it on, and Mark, you know, he wanted to differentiate between new products, and so there was a draft booster, a booster themed around certain colors, and then this, the collector premium booster. And this, of course, had a higher chance for pretty much everything in it.
Now, there's no booster packs in here because we gave them all away as prizes for the Game Nights giveaways, but you can see it's a small box. The box itself is foil.
Yeah.
It came with 12... special packs, and they were about $30 MSRP. I know they don't do MSRP anymore, but that's about what you could find them for, $30, $35.
There were at least two rares or mythics, I think, in each of them, and a bunch of foils.
I was going to say, do you know what was in each pack? Because I have no idea.
I don't. I opened up a bunch of packs, and remember that card, Happily Ever After, whichever, the white, like, stupid win condition
I
banged
on? Yes, we know. You can sometimes do it. We've seen the tweets.
I bought one, and I opened all of them, and in two of the packs, I got that card in foil. So that's karma for me. So yes, all you people out there, like, yeah, I got it. Yeah.
I wanted to do a draft with them because they're not made. They're like,
yeah, they're just,
there's
so
like insane. More rares in there. Yeah. And they're all, I don't, but the problem I think with this product is like, they were like too many ideas. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, there's some are full art. Then there's some extended art. Then there's foils. Then there's the storybook chart. Then there's and it's just like, I have no idea what I can even possibly open in there and what versions of what cards are even available. To this day, if you said like I don't know, name a card from Throne of Eldraine. I don't know how many different versions of that specific card there are.
I don't either. There's so many different, and like maybe this is a little bit of overwhelming us as collectors for being a collector booster. I used to have this sort of like, I'm going to get four of all my favorite cards from the set. I know there's a regular and a foil version. Now I don't even know where to start with
Throne of
Eldraine.
It's nuts. Like, yeah. So that made me just throw up my hands and be like, listen, I'm not going to actually try and get any of this stuff. Because I have no idea even what there is, and I just don't have the brain power to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the headline there. Josh doesn't have enough brain power.
Josh's brain power at an all-time low as soon as a collector's booster was put in front of him.
It was like, doot-doot, malfunction, forget it.
Like, this looks like a regular booster. You open it, you're like, what is happening? Yeah. Imagine drafting that. It's like you have to do a sanity check like you're in the
Cthulhu
mystery.
I did want to draft it just because it doesn't, I think, like, only fun. Certain cards could be in the collector's boosters. It wasn't, the whole set's not even possible.
Yeah.
So then it's like a really skewed draft. I mentioned this tomorrow. I was like, I want to draft with it. He's like, no, it's not designed for that. And I'm like, but it'd be so fun. He's like, no. I'm like, but it'd be crazy, Mark. He's like, it's not designed for it.
Not made for that. Yeah. It's going to be bonkers weird. Maybe in like a chaos draft, you just throw one in there.
I like that idea. There you also go. Because you're chaos drafting. Which
exactly.
All right. And then the last product they released this year was another interesting one and sort of, I don't know, is it like a cross between Mythic Edition and...
I think it's like, they're called timed releases. It's okay, Secret Lair. And the way that works is that for a X period amount of time, in this case 24 hours, you can buy as many of these as you want.
Well, they set a limit.
Yes, they set a limit up to 10. But the idea is like anyone has access to it. You can all do it. It's not something
we're not going
to
sell out.
Yeah, it's not going to be like the Mythic Editions of the past. And each of them were a different themed set of 3 to 5-ish cards, sometimes in foil, sometimes not. Covering, I guess, the spectrum of kind of what Magic players like and are.
Yeah, there was a set of snow-covered lands. There was a cat group that was like all these cute cat arts. There was a bunch of 5-color commanders, which were really cool.
There was just Bitter Blossom and a bunch of fairy tokens.
Yeah. It was really interesting. I would love to know what the numbers were like on all these, like which ones did well. I'm sure they were doing this as an experiment, too.
It had to have been.
And cover. So I'm sure they went like, let's cover the spectrum here, see where our demographics are, what appeals to what, how many we sell of these.
Which ones are the most popular, and I'm sure on the down low, also analyze the secondary market and see what happens to them after the fact.
Yeah, here's the thing. Obviously, we were involved with helping to announce the launch of this thing. They came to us and they're like, hey, we'll give you one of these, we showed off on your thing. And of course, we have 100% Magic players out in the audience, so we usually say yes to that stuff because we figured that's something you all out there want to know
to see,
about.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it didn't give us a lot of chance to talk about it. This is definitely an interesting sort of, I don't know, attempt or foray into the singles market directly, right? Like, up until now, Wizards hasn't ever just sold singles.
Yeah, and they are obviously doing it through the guise of alternate art, foil, premium edition, can't get it anywhere else, only in a specific kind of product, but it's true. I mean, if you look at each of the releases, they're all so vastly different, and they all appeal to a very specific kind of player.
The Bitter Blossom is really one card they're selling you. Like, yeah, there's some tokens in there, but like, and it was priced at a slightly under what Bitter Blossom, like it was $30, and Bitter Blossom was about $35.
Yeah.
I mean, that's can't be a coincidence. So really interesting to see where this goes. If they do, I'm assuming that it went well and they're going to do more of this. But it definitely, there are changes going on in the market and how Wizards is like able to sort of, I don't know, navigate all that stuff, online sales and things like that.
Yeah, and it's different too because you know exactly what you're getting, right? Even in the signature spell books, wasn't there a chance of only one of them or some of them being full?
Some
you wouldn't
chance
know.
Involved.
Yeah, and in this case, you know exactly what you're getting for what price point. And I would be fascinated, obviously this is something that none of us have access to, but knowing how well it did and whether or not this is going to change their decisions for things all the way down to regular sets as opposed to doing stuff like this again in the future. I actually kind of like it. I think giving players a chance to buy something without having them have the feel bads of, it's sold out, I can't get it, and I know how much I'm going to pay for it, is great.
I mean, think about what's the one of the big like boogeyman of like reprints that people want, like the fetch lands.
Yeah.
Think if they put the 5 fetch lands in a secret lair and it was $100.
And everyone could buy it.
And you can buy up to 10 of them for $100. That makes them $20 each, which is a steal by current market value, especially if it's the Zendikar fetches.
Mm-hmm.
What's stopping them from doing that? Why wouldn't they do that? If they can just directly sell you singles, basically.
Yeah, they know exactly what players want. They can see cards that are maybe getting way too high for players and it's starting to grow descent.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, interesting.
I don't think you'll find anyone saying, this is stupid.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the Channel Fireballs of the world wouldn't love that because, you know, their inventory suddenly becomes worth a lot less. But
yeah.
I think...
I mean, even if you don't buy it, doesn't that mean that the price of everything else is going to slightly go down, right?
Hopefully. Yeah, that's what I mean. That's why I think if you're like a really large Magic retailer and you're holding on to a bunch, which, hey, I'm not a large Magic retailer, so for us, it's just kind of good. Like, I could get cheap fetches.
Well, also, like, it affects everything. You go to a Magic Fest, now you can start trading for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, more people will just have these in circulation. They don't need to worry about printing it into Standard or sticking into a Commander set, all that stuff.
Did you order any Secret Lair?
I got all of them.
You got the bundle?
Yeah, I got the bundle.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, this is a nice way to just get everything and not have to worry about it.
Yeah, I got two of the bundles.
Nice.
Because I think we may give one of those away.
Maybe.
Maybe. Okay. We're going to talk about a lot of other stuff. There were changes to our format. There were new formats that were invented this year. There are all kinds of like cool stories in Magic. Plus, we're going to talk about our picks for the best cards, best commanders, best artwork, all kinds of stuff. But before we get into that, we're going to take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
All right. Year in review. Good stuff. So many things happened this year. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the nitty gritty of some of our favorite cards, some of the new formats that came into existence, and what I like to call the most wholesome stories for Magic this year. But we'll get to that very last. Okay, first up, changes to the format of Commander. This is big. Paradox Engine and Iona Shield of Emeria were banned. And Painter's Servant, a card that a lot of people have been clamoring for, has been unbanned.
Yeah, interesting. This was the first year that I believe since we had the podcast where they banned two cards in the same year. In fact, we didn't even average one card ban per year.
Yeah, it was just Prophet of Privilege for the second year, and then that was kind of it for a while.
Yeah, we haven't seen a ban in a long time. So them banning two cards and then unbanning a card, which they did unban Protean Hulk fairly recently. So that's something that we've maybe seen a little more often, more recently anyway. We kind of set our piece at the time about us not liking the bands. Do you feel the same way about it still?
I mean, I don't. Here's the thing. It's one of those weird things where it's like, I don't miss seeing Paradox Engine on the battlefield.
Right.
But I don't not miss it either, because it's almost like you place, get rid of one boogeyman, another one's going to pop up in its place. You're still going to see things that are on that level of like, oh, come on, great, fine. Like a single card that comes down that just kind of wins the game for people. Like you might say that Mycosynth Lattice has the same effect as Iona in terms of how powerful it is. So
we were playing a game the other night and somebody War of Inventioned, and I remember in my brain, I was literally thinking, well, normally I would be scared here of Paradox Engine, but it's banned. But now I'm scared of Bolas of Citadel. And they went, Bolas of Citadel, win. You know? And I was like, yep.
Yeah, maybe it takes a little more. Like, how much more percentage setup does it take for Bolas of Citadel to win the game?
Not much more, honestly.
Paradox Engine, yeah.
If you have top, you're good.
Yeah. No, yeah,
which
actually
the person did.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah, I still don't like either of the bands. Really don't like the Iona ban. The Paradox Engine ban, I'm more like lukewarm on. It's like, that's fine.
Yeah,
it was a powerful card, whatever.
Iona, that just one at least makes sense. I can stomach it. Iona definitely seemed like a, all right, who complained the loudest here?
Yeah, just out of left field. Like, I just, that is not a game breaking card
yeah
in any way. But Painter's Servant unban, I'm still like, let me ask you this question. Since it got unbanned, how many times have you seen it in games?
Zero.
I've seen it twice.
Okay. And you definitely played a lot more because you went to MF Seattle and stuff.
And both times, it was totally fine, totally fair. I don't think either time the person won the game off of it. They did some cool stuff and we were scared.
Yeah, yeah.
This one was like, oh, painter server, what's going to happen here? And it was like, that was pretty cool, I guess. But
new territory, yeah.
But nothing insane happened.
It feels like Spy Kit to me, a card that's like, this has to be broken somehow.
Yeah. I mean, there are ways to break painter server, but less ways than you think. And, you know, unless they literally tutor right after they play it, I think like it's going to be like mostly normal commander shenanigans with it.
Yeah, and if Painter Servant could be your commander, it'd be a different story, but as it is, it's still just a card in the 99. So I like that. The Painter Servant man feels like the Protean Hulk one, which is just like, yeah, you can break it if you want, but it's not going to be format warping.
I mean, Protean Hulk, way more powerful in CDH. It is a little bit format warping there, but I think this the lesson from these bans and unbans was that should be that unbans, there's probably a lot of stuff on there that can come off. I mean,
Worldfire.
Yeah. Not what I meant.
Give it to me.
All right. So that was changes to our format, but this year also brought about a couple of new formats.
Very exciting. One that people have asked us to talk about repeatedly, and one that I'm glad that we didn't spend the whole episode talking about because it does not seem to be around much anymore. And I know this is contentious, and I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of messages saying that I'm completely wrong, but Oathbreaker popped onto the scene, a format where any planeswalker could be your commander, and each commander had a signature card.
Signature spell.
Spell that would also go alongside it. So you had sort of access to two cards always from your command zone.
You could only you can only cast a signature spell if your commander is on the battlefield. And your commander, has to be a planeswalker. Of course, it was very, very popular around the time when it was created, because that was around War of the Spark, and that was the time when everyone was planeswalker crazy. Everyone was planeswalker drunk and wanted to play all the planeswalkers.
I'm drunk
all the time.
On planeswalkers.
Yeah, and so that was the time when all the hullabaloo was going on, and yeah, it was exciting times, I think, for a lot of people, and a lot of people found the format fun. I still haven't played it, and here's the thing: not for lack of trying.
Yeah,
I went to Magic Fest Vegas, and I was like, I would ask people, anybody got Oathbreaker decks? Like, I'll play. Can I borrow one? No one had one. And I just never found a game. And then Command Fest Seattle, they had a big room there, but they had little signs up. And it was like, this is the casual commander area, which was big. This is the competitive commander area, which was slightly smaller, but still a decent amount. Then they had like a row. And this row is for Pauper Commander. And this row is for Brawl. And this row is for Oathbreaker. And I was like, sweet. I'm just going to swing by the Oathbreaker area, and if I can find a game, I will. And I kept walking by that area the whole weekend, and there would just be no one there. And one time, I was like, saw some people playing, and I actually like rushed over because I was like, sweet, maybe I can get in. They're playing Modern. So,
whoops.
Yeah, so listen, I don't want to, if you're playing Oathbreaker and you enjoy it, that's great, but
keep going, have fun, build decks. That's a great part.
Yeah, I think unfortunately, like, I just haven't been able to see it out in the wild, and not for lack of looking.
I have not played a game, and that is for lack of looking, because I left it up to you, and you clearly tried pretty hard, so I don't know. I mean, look, if it happens, I'll play it. I'm not, like, against playing it.
It seems like it'd be fun. Yeah. I just don't want to spend all the time building a deck that I could never use.
Yeah, I mean, look, we all remember Tiny Leaders.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most apt comparison here, in that it's, there are a lot, Magic's a great, amazing, beautiful game, and it's amazing people build cubes. They do their own play experiences, and Oathbreaker is, I think, a version of that same extension of, like, I love Magic so much, I'm going to make something for it. But sometimes things are flash in the pan.
Oh, you know what I did play at least two games of in Vegas was Brawl. So that's...
Oh, cool.
I think that's... At least some people are playing that.
I think that that has a much more direct effect. Like, you play Standard, you can make a Brawl deck.
Yeah.
And that is always going to be something that kind of works because that ecosystem and that line of path is there.
And also with it coming to Arena, I think a lot of people are excited about that format, maybe more so.
You know what I would enjoy? Maybe if you had an Oathbreaker cube.
Ooh,
maybe that's something you
that'd
could
be
do.
Fun.
Yeah.
It's just because I like cube.
Yeah. And cool. It's something that you can just put on the table and go, hey, we're going to do this. Not everyone needs to build a deck or bring
it. Right.
So
Brandon Sanderson, get on it. Another new format that hit the scene pretty recently with a huge splash has sort of taken over a lot of the, I don't know, the conversation out there and definitely shaking up the MTG finance side.
A lot of streamers playing it as well.
A lot of cards getting going crazy as far as their prices, just roller coaster. It's been nuts. Mm-hmm. It's the Pioneer format.
Modern 2.0.
Yeah. So they basically, yeah, that's basically exactly what it is. They just set a new cutoff date and said, okay, new format is from here forward.
The only cards that are banned right now when they started were the Fetchlands.
Yeah.
And they've added a couple to that, I believe.
They did Return to Ravnica block forward
mm-hmm.
and said, yeah, no cons fetches. No, they've banned some cards since.
Oko, so, Smuggler's Copter, right?
Boy, don't ask me what the Pioneer bans are, because they've been banning pretty regularly.
Field of the Dead, I think they banned.
They started with nothing banned, and then they went, okay, every Monday from here on for a little while, we're maybe going to ban stuff. So they have a ban announcement like every week.
Which is kind of cool.
Not that they're banning something every week, just that they have the ability to. Just, yeah. Yeah, and so it's been, that's why I said it's been a roller coaster, because if you got in on the best deck, maybe you got banned, and then all of a sudden, you know, all these cards, this deck's going to be awesome. I haven't played it at all, but people are very excited about it.
It has that feeling that I think draws a lot of people into Standard, which is like, who knows what's going to shift up the format, and it's a brand new format. It's super fresh, and so as a result, I think everyone's rapidly testing, seeing what works, seeing what doesn't, and getting away with cool jank decks. So there's a lot of that sort of excitement around it, which makes a lot of sense.
I mean, I think when, especially for 1v1 formats, when they're the most fun is at the beginning of a format when nobody's cracked it yet,
yeah,
and it's a Brewer's Paradise, and it feels like, hey, I just might come up with something no one else has come up with yet and just come out of nowhere mm-hmm. and have just like the best deck all of a sudden. And that's exciting to think about. Like, yeah. I could put two cards together and the format's so young, nobody's thought of this. I'm the first one and I could just take down a tournament out of nowhere.
Yeah, that's like literally the dream for a Brewer.
Yeah, but the problem is that can't last very long. The longer the format is around, the more it starts to get solved. I always thought it'd be fun to have a quote-unquote a randomly rotating format. Like, imagine,
oh, interesting,
there's a lot of reasons why this would be hard to pull off, but imagine that, like, they were like, okay, there's a tournament, it's next Saturday, on Wednesday we will randomly select the six sets that you can
build decks from.
So you can't test, it's just who's the best Brewer. You're gonna have 3 or 4 days, and then then 2 weeks later, well, the next tournament will be another randomly selected six sets or whatever. The problem is everyone would have to have every
all those cards
from every set.
But you know where you could do that? Arena.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You could find ways for people to redeem, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And you might have to say it's only for sets that have been since this has come out or whatever. But Arena also has a new format called Historic, which I've seen a lot of streamers playing too. So that's a lot of new stuff coming. And Arena is actually the harbinger of a lot of it, because I believe the World Championships next year, for the first time ever, no more limited, Arena only.
Wow. Not just new formats this year. There were some new things announced.
Yeah.
So Magic is making a Netflix series, and this is an animated series.
Yes.
And this is, they got some big names attached.
Yeah. Joe and Anthony Russo. Everyone knows them as the Russo brothers. You know, Avengers.
The directors of the Avengers.
Yeah. They're going to be executive producing an animated adaptation revolving around, of course, Planeswalkers, who are the closest to humans, I suppose. And the quote is, "We have been huge fans and players of Magic the Gathering for as long as it has been around. So being able to help bring these stories to life through animation is a true passion project for us."
So my first thought when reading that is like, because they're in LA probably, right?
Yeah.
Do they want to come on game nights? Russo Brothers, I'm assuming you're listening. If you would like to come on game nights, you know, call us. Have your agent call us. They probably have an agent.
We'll just call you.
We'll call you. Give us your number. If anybody out there knows them,
call them.
Call them. Tell them about game nights. You know, that'd be sweet.
The other thing I thought
also,
when I saw this,
cast Jimmy in the next Marvel movie.
I'm down.
I'm sure they have that power, you know?
I'll go from 600 AD, wherever Mulan's, but I don't even know the time period Mulan's based, into the future.
Yeah.
Why now not? I have superpowers. That'd be pretty cool. They said it's a passion project. Do they have time for passion projects?
Yeah. People like this are so insanely busy, but maybe they play Magic. It's possible.
That'd be really cool.
I know there are some Hollywood groups that play. There are like groups of like writers and things like that play D&D, play Magic. So maybe they're in that. I have no idea. But it's pretty cool that we're going to get an animated series and that they have, like, obviously these two brothers are pretty creative, smart guys. So it makes me feel like there's a decent chance that the series is good.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, animated, I think, is one of the best ways to approach something like Magic the Gathering, because live action, and that was a series that a movie they're trying to make for a while, it's just so hard to wrap my head around how that would look and feel correct.
Yeah, to me, every time they would talk about the movie, I just shake my head like, I don't think that'll ever happen, because I just don't know the way that you do that.
Yep.
At least currently. All right, now there's a whole bunch of stuff that, well, you were involved with and we were involved with that happened last year. You want to run through it?
Yeah, so the first one that happened was the PAX Mythic Invitational. It was at PAX East this year, and I hosted a panel to talk about War of the Spark. That was the first time they debuted the Liliana trailer, which goes against Bolas.
With the Linkin Park song?
I watched people just cry in front of me because I'd seen it already, and you just look into the audience and people were just like, which is a really magic moment.
I mean, let's give it up for the marketing team over there at Wizards, because the War of the Spark teaser trailer, the Sword of Eldraine,
yeah, super good.
They've been killing it for sure.
I also hosted the set reveals for 2020 with Mark Rosewater and Cynthia Shepherd, and we talked a lot about Throne of Eldraine previews. That's where Garrick Wild Huntsman, or the Huntsman, I forget what it's called, was the first time we previewed that as well. So that was really fun. We baked cookies together. Mark was in his element, as always.
Baking cookies?
Yeah, and you know what my favorite part about it is about when filming with Mark? So they, you know, sound
volume.
Guys. Sound guys are usually one of the interchangeable format people in on a set, and so you always have new people miking you up or new people doing makeup. Those are sort of the two that change a lot. And I've done stuff with Mark like 3 or 4 times now, and every time it's a different sound person. You can just tell the first time they mic him up, they just do one of these. They're like, oh, whoa. Okay, all right, let's...
Oh, he talks like that all the time.
Coming in hot, real hot. Oh, gosh, how do I do this? So watching them navigate those wires with Mark is always a blast. I love the guy.
Kyle Hill had a cool video. Did we not talk about this on our show? I don't think we did. So Kyle Hill, obviously of Game Nights and Extra Turns, been on some of our content. We talk about him a lot. Plays a lot of Commander. He has a channel on YouTube called Because Science. It's only got like a million subscribers. It's not very big. Kyle does a lot of cool sciencey stuff where he'll break down like why you wouldn't really want to have super speed or it's, yeah, really cool stuff. Well, he did a video about the fact that you can build from Magic cards using their text box and the way that the cards interact in the game legally. You can build a Turing machine, which is basically a computer.
A working computer named after Alan Turing, who made the first computer. And he brought us on. We came and filmed it here in our studios, and Kyle sort of deconstructed the whole thing in front of us. I was just as confused as I'm sure a lot of people were. But this was based off of like paperwork and research done by PhD level, I don't know, doctors, scientists, whatever you want to call them. And so Kyle had this whole thing built out. It's a really fascinating video. And
it's a legal legacy deck.
Yeah, how he gets to doing it is actually really, really cool.
We will definitely link the video in the show notes. Yeah, as we were doing it, it was so complex. I mean, we were able to sort of keep up. But I was like thinking the whole time, I don't know if you were the same, I was like, man, how are they going to cut this into anything where it's for A, not a million years long, like where it's, and B, where like people watch it and don't get confused. But the video is done really, really well. So I think they did a really good job of producing the video and making it digestible if you haven't checked it out.
Not to mention Kyle just came in and was just like, yeah, I got it. I know what's up. And he just talked through the whole thing. And yeah. Like, nice. You didn't have to reference your script like at all. You clearly have done the research. So big props to Kyle as well.
Kyle also clearly a guy that's just on camera all the time. Like he's like, whatever, just push record and all. It's fine.
We'll figure
it
out.
And he just boom, turns on and says it all without missing a beat. Yeah. We had Gavin Verhey from Wizards of the Coast come on our channel to talk about the big Commander 2020 announcements. This was kind of a big moment, I think, for us in our channel where we got to sort of become like a big announcement platform, you know, just showed that we've grown to the point where Wizards really trusts us to help them let the community know about stuff that's coming down the pipe.
Yeah, and I think it says a lot, too, that they're willing to do so on a channel where we've been openly critical about decisions they've made before, and we have even on this episode, and it's something that I think a lot of more casual viewers of the show kind of miss out on, because you kind of have to dig deep and find the moments when we're talking about stuff to hear us being like, I hated that. I don't think that's a good idea. But it's great. You know, I think Wizards is moving forward, is becoming better and better at figuring out how to interact with their community and really work on that level. So, I'm glad that they trust us.
And credit where credit is due. I think they were pretty sure that we were going to be excited about these particular announcements.
Yes, yes.
Which, you know.
And we talked about them later as well. And, you know, obviously we have our concerns. But overall, it's Magic cards. We're going to be excited, as I'm sure a lot of you out there as well.
And Gavin is just such a good steward of the game. He just loves it so much. Like,
yeah.
I'm not saying Gavin will never make mistakes, or Mark, or a lot of people over there who but their hearts are in the right place. Like, they really do love the game, and they're trying to make it as awesome as possible. So yeah, I guess that's all to say about that.
A couple other small things. Magic the Gathering Arena finally launched officially. It seems like it's been in beta for almost a year now. There's a really fun commercial that Josh and I actually got to visit the set for.
Oh, right.
With Carl Weathers and Sophia Lillis from It. And
Apollo.
Apollo, yeah.
Apollo Creed.
Also, the Predator handshake, one of the greatest handshakes ever committed to film.
Yep.
Those biceps.
Also, what was his character name on Happy Gilmore? Tubbs?
Tubbs, yeah. And then Mando.
Yeah.
You're my favorite bounty hunter, Mando. Yeah, like he's in The Mandalorian too. So that's really cool. And I was in a small little cameo playing Sophia Lillis. Low known fact, my section in that, if you watch it again, all that footage was filmed on an iPhone on a chair, like with like boxes stacked on it, with a guy just sort of sitting there going click and holding it as steady as possible.
Which is hilarious because when we went to visit the set, it was like legit. Like they closed down a street.
Yes.
They had like, who was the DP? It was like
Bill Pope, the guy that did The Matrix.
Oh, yeah.
One of the greatest DPs of all time.
He's got awards named after him. For real. Yeah, but your part was on an iPhone.
Yeah, they like called me in their office.
And it was like scheduled like really like short notice, right?
Yeah, like 2 days before.
They're like, hey, do you want to do this? Okay.
I'm like, all right, sure, why not?
But the commercial turned out great. Yeah. Brian Perry over at Wizards was the person who sort of led us on the set and is in charge of a lot of that stuff. And
yeah,
I really liked how the commercial turned out. It was funny and it made fun of, I guess it was for my generation. So
a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Hit the notes. Yeah. I wonder if Carl Weathers is sick of doing things that are related to Rocky.
Yeah, he's like always like, again, I got to parody this whole thing for my whole life.
Mando! Okay. And then finally, the Command Zone was the first time we've seen this like, you know, used as an area. By the way, the Command Zone podcast, we all got our name from the actual Command Zone. So the Command Zone at MF Vegas in Seattle, Josh went to the one in Seattle. We were both at Vegas.
Command Zone areas all over the world at Magic Fest now.
Yeah, which is cool. It was great to see the first ever iteration of it, and it did really well, which means Commander, one of the most popular formats ever.
To be clear, also, we don't have anything to do with the use of that name.
Correct.
For a live event, so we don't run it. So every once in a while, people will...
I know. Someone got mad at me over something. I was like, bro, it's not me.
You gotta talk to Channel Fireball. You gotta talk to Wizards. Like,
yeah.
You think we're running, you know, the logistics of every single Command Zone area at live events across the planet? No, that has nothing to do with us. Yeah. Okay. This was likely the biggest year in history for Magic the Gathering. We know this from a few different metrics. One, on the professional side of the game, we saw the biggest tournament prize pools that we've ever seen. They launched the MPL. This was the first year of the MPL, which, let's be honest, had its ups and downs.
The Magic Pro League. We talked about that a little bit as well.
Yeah, but the result of that was definitely like a lot of eyeballs on Magic. They definitely went out there, and the trailers that you talked about or we talked about helped a lot. A lot of excitement for the sets and a lot of new people coming into the game through Arena.
Yeah, a lot of new streamers as well. That was really awesome to see that entire community really get built up and just expand this year more than ever.
Yeah, so I think it's pretty fair to say that this would be the biggest year. 2019 has been the biggest year Magic's ever seen.
Yep.
The growth and launch of Arena, obviously a big part of that. Also, this was the year where Commander kind of became universally recognized as the most popular format. I think up till now, it had this slow thing where it was like, back when we started the podcast, like it was way down on the list and kind of a joke. I mean, people would sort of laughingly talk about Commander. Honestly, like, I would feel that where it would be like, you know, the first...
Yeah, we play Commander.
The first GP Vegas that we went to, people kind of, like, chuckled about it. Like, oh, they're Commander players.
Yeah, go over and sit in your little side tables over there. We're going to draft. We're going to play Modern.
Yeah, which, I mean, you know, it's slightly irksome at the time. We kind of chuckled along, though. We still drafted and stuff and just was like, whatever. But now...
I think it's a great sign that, you know, like, pros recognize it, pros play it. You know, everyone that you talk to... probably has a Commander deck or some semblance of it or is willing to play it. So
it kind of feels like superhero movies. You know, when I was growing up, like people who read comic books and played Dungeons and Dragons and stuff were like super nerdy and geeky and got made fun of in school and stuff. And then we all grew up and took over the world. And like every movie is a superhero movie now. And it's like you thought Spider-Man was really dorky when I was in high school, but you think it's cool now, don't you?
Yeah, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to hang you by your underwear on the locker. That's what they did, right?
Yeah, yes.
All right. Let's go down the line and talk about best ofs, and there's plenty of them.
Yeah, let's talk about some cards.
Yeah, so let's break it down. First up, best art from 2019. When I first wrote this, I just wrote best Seb McKinnon art from 2019.
Yes, because you listed only Seb McKinnon. Yeah, I was like, no, there was a couple others. Well, one other that I thought was on the list. Okay, so Let's read the cards and we'll put them on screen for those watching on YouTube.
Okay, we have Soul Herder.
It's a sweet one.
Bedevil. Also a sweet one. Deliver Unto Evil.
Also sweet. All by Seb McKinnon.
Fibblethip the Lost.
By our friend Jesper Ising. And I like the Fibblethip thing a lot.
Yeah, the colors on that are really evocative.
Yeah, and the way that he uses Dustin like to silhouette him, kind of like very...
Really, he
Jesper's
feels
really good too. Okay, let's do the thing where we both think of what our favorite one of these four is, and then we say it at the same time. I've got mine. You got yours?
I got mine too.
3, 2, 1.
Deliver unto evil.
Boom.
We have the playmat somewhere here in the office as well. I just remember seeing that art. And Seb McKinnon, he's just had what I think is his most breakout year ever.
Oh, yeah. Just killing it.
Killing it. Now, of course, there was tons of other amazing art, too. Titus Lyncher did that amazing Ravnica one, I think, this year with the guild symbol or the magic symbol in the middle of the Planeswalker symbol. There's tons of art out there. Obviously, art to the listeners, you can this can be one of the questions that you bring up. Hey, I thought this art was better. But, man, that art, Deliver Unto Evil, it's beautiful.
I don't usually care about art, but when I saw that art, my jaw dropped. I was like, that thing's crazy.
That's cool.
Really cool.
I can't believe that's a magic art, you know?
Yeah. All right, the next category we're going to talk about is Best New Commander. So you originally listed down like four, and then I was like, but what about this one? But what about that one? But what about this one?
Oh, yeah.
And I listed down a million more. So I'm just going to read a few, and then we can talk about it for a second. So Best New Commander nominees. The nominees are Urza, High Lord Artificer, which was our preview card. Prime Speaker Vanifar, which was our preview card. Feather, the Redeemed, also
our preview card.
Yarok, the Desecrated.
Not
our preview card. Anya Falconrath, Tasa Karlov, Yawgmoth, Thrawn Physician, Kirik, Son of Yawgmoth, Chulainn, Teller of Tales, Korvald, Fakehurst King, Kenrith, Returned King, and Torbran, Thane of Redfell. I'm surprised you didn't have Torbran on your original list.
Yeah, you know, he's good, but he's not...
He's pretty good.
He's not as good as Naheb.
The problem with best is that it can mean a couple of different things. I think we should split this into most powerful and then our personal favorite.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Apologies to the editors. We just named a million cards that they had to put on screen.
Well, let's not forget our five-color favorites outside of Kamarath. We have Morophon, too, and Golos.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Golos.
Yeah, dude.
That's a cool deck, too. Okay. Most powerful.
All right. I think
we're going to agree, but let's... Well, yeah. 3, 2, 1.
Urza.
Oh.
Free mana. Well, they both come with a lot of free mana, I suppose.
It also could be Anya, who is a really, really, really strong deck if built that way.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen one that's like turn three, kill you every time.
What?
Yeah. So that's
crazy.
So those are very powerful decks.
Wow.
Not the decks we would build necessarily. Okay, favorite. Actually, my favorite's not even on this list, so.
Really?
Yeah.
I think my favorite for a different reason, but it's my favorite.
Okay, 3, 2, 1.
Feather.
Greven.
Ah, Greven. That's right.
Yeah. You know what's funny? Besides game nights, outside of game nights, I built two decks this year, Feather and Greven.
Yeah. Well, they both finally do things that are cool. Like Greven draws more cards than, many decks. Yeah,
I mean,
it's
you kill yourself as you do it, but that's part of the fun.
Yeah. And Feather is just the best Boros commander ever, as far as I can tell, in terms of like actual value and card, you know, it's great. You finally get card draw in a way.
I mean, Feather's a red-white deck where you never feel like you run out of stuff to do. You always have a full grip, and you're always like half... Like, you don't necessarily win, but it's not... That's what I hate about Boros generally, is like a lot of games you get to the point where you're like just top-decking, and it's just not very fun because you just don't have a lot of options of what you can do.
You never want to be in that position.
Yeah. Interesting. Korvald, also a very powerful commander. Could be maybe one of the most powerful, too.
Totally.
Okay. Let's talk about cards in the 99 now. So, best overall card...
We got plenty of these as well. So let's just go down the list. The first up, we've already talked about this episode, Smothering Tithe.
Gonna be hard not to win.
Yeah. Well, maybe the last one too. Arcane Signet, which was in the Brawl decks this year.
Overrated.
Narset, Parter of Veils.
Oh my lord. I swear, I feel like I see it more and more, and it just does what Leovold used to do.
Yeah.
But it's so good. Every time it gets out, you're just like, crap, I got to deal with that thing now.
Well, and it probably will draw you two more cards if you protect it. Guardian Project, speaking of drawing cards.
I just start putting it on every green deck, it feels like.
Why not?
It's so good.
It's built for Commander.
Yep.
Prismatic Vista. Thank you.
Yeah, unfortunately, kind of spendy, but it is effectively a fetch land.
Well, let's hope that more of those come out next year. Yeah. It would be great if that was another like Sol Ring Command Tower in every single precon.
That would be
amazing. And finally, Bolas's Citadel. I think it's between Smothering Tide and Bolas the Citadel, to be honest.
As far as most powerful?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, okay, you ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1.
Smothering Tide.
Yeah, I think it's just impossible for another card to win this category this year because this is the breakout card of the year for the format.
And for the color.
It, yeah, it literally goes in every single deck that has white. It just does.
Unless like, you somehow have so... like, unless it's like a white-green deck and you have so much other ramp that you don't need it.
Yeah, I think you still play it. It's so good because just... there is not a game of Commander where the turn rotation goes, everybody just draws one card.
Yeah.
Always you have players drawing extra cards. And so this is always creating 5+ mana per rotation of the table. It is just an insane card. It's the Cyclonic Rift of white in that it's like... gonna go in your white deck.
Yeah.
Listen, you might not put it in your deck that has white in it, but I think that's objectively just incorrect.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, I think people are much less likely to pay for Smothering Tide than they are for a Rhystic Study.
It's too.
Yeah.
It's too much.
Why? It is too much.
Yeah. You gotta give 2 mana so they don't get 1 mana? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and just in a 4-player game, you're probably gonna get minimum 3.
Yep.
So that's a huge amount of ramp.
If they pay 2, you're fine. You're like, yep, you did that.
Yeah, another thing, the reason I like treasures is that they can add up.
Yeah.
They'll just sit there and you keep accumulating more and more and more, and all of a sudden you have a 15-mana turn on turn 5. It's like, what the heck?
Not to mention all the cards that just say, like, how many artifacts you have, or give improvise, or, like, there's all kinds of ways to just take advantage of the fact of having a lot of artifacts or tokens out. Double the amount of tokens you have, you know?
Ugh, gross.
Yeah. Smothering Tide are so, so good. Okay. Let's talk about the best under-the-radar card. So this is... the best card we think that's not getting a lot of press out there right now. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, this first one you put down, which is a very me card, so I was proud that you put it down.
Yeah, it's Lotus Field. Mm-hmm. It's basically go to Lotus on the land with some downsides.
It's Lotus Veil, but safer.
Yes, a little bit safer, yeah.
Because it's got Hexproof, so it's harder. Like, Lotus Veil is a card I used to play, but if anybody strip mines it, you sacrifice 2 lands.
Yeah.
So they get rid of 3 of your land drops in 1 foul swoop.
Hurrah.
Whereas Lotus Field, you don't really have to worry about that.
Yep. Sudden Substitution, one of the most interesting counter spells I've ever seen in my life.
It's a counter steal.
Counter steal, yeah.
Split second.
Savin's Reclamation.
This is interesting in that...
white ramp?
Yeah, white ramp. And I have seen this more and more where people are putting this in white decks with fetch lands and getting at least 1 land back with it, and sometimes 2. And if you get 2, it's really good.
Yeah, it's definitely better than what white could be doing beforehand. Rhythm of the Wild, the new Fires of Yavimaya, as far as I'm concerned.
Even better, because it makes your spells uncounterable. If you're playing a lot of creatures and you're in red-green and you're not playing Rhythm of the Wild, you're doing something wrong, because you want the haste and you want the uncounterable.
Yeah. Collector Oofy.
Oh, unfortunately, I've seen this card just a lot.
I haven't that much at all.
It's just Stony Silence on a creature.
Yeah.
But it's in green. And I think that's what puts it over the top, because green
doesn't have that.
Green doesn't have to use artifact ramp, whereas white decks don't play Stony Silence that much because they do have to play artifact ramp.
Mm-hmm.
But green's like, I'm putting a bunch of lands in play. I might only have 5 artifacts in my whole deck.
So Oofy is just
going to shut everybody else off, but not me.
It's going to make you go, oof.
Yeah.
Narset's Reversal. I really am a big fan of this one as well, because it feels less worse than a counterspell, but essentially kind of is a counterspell.
This might, besides Smothering Tithe and Bolas the Citadel, secretly be the most powerful card that came out this year. The kind of blowouts that you can have with Narset's Reversal, because it does not counter the spell, it actually can counter uncounterable spells,
right?
Because it bounces it back to their hand, and it forks the spell for you, so they time stretch, and you're like, I'll time stretch, and you won't. They expropriate, I will expropriate, and you won't. Those are blowout, like, steal, snatch victory from the jaws of defeat type plays for 2 blue mana. It's crazy.
Yeah. Anytime something's blue and it has a counter-esque effect on it, you gotta pay attention.
I think it's actually kind of just better than straight counterspell a lot of the time.
Yeah, I could see that too. Wilderness Reclamation is similar to the Seedborne Muse-esque effects of the past.
It seems a lot worse because it only untaps you once, but it's just so powerful. It can be like an extra turn every rotation of the table.
Sometimes that's, right? I'll take 1 extra turn.
Yeah,
if I get 3, sure, but 1's pretty darn good too. Biomancer's Familiar, an effect that we enjoy very much in Commander as well.
Training Ground's so expensive, and this is a very cheap version of it, and there's a reason Training Grounds is expensive. It's not because of Modern or Legacy or anything, it's because of our format, and this is the type of ability, because it reduces the cost of activated abilities that a lot of decks want.
Flood of Tears, what happens to me after most game nights. It's usually much more salty, though.
This is the one where you bounce everybody's stuff, but if you yourself bounce 4 of your own things or more, then you get to put a permanent back onto the battlefield.
That's pretty sweet.
I've seen some huge blowouts with this card that's just made me think, oh, I need to put that in more decks.
Yeah. And Faerberal Elder.
The new Bloomtender.
Yeah.
And another Bloomtender is a very expensive card, and there's a reason it's very expensive.
This one costs one more mana, but at the very least, it is a version of Bloomtender that you can put into your decks. This one's tough. I don't really know, because some of these cards aren't really that under the radar to me sometimes. Like, Rhythm of the Wild is like, yeah, we all know this is just the better haste enabler.
I feel like I just haven't seen it as much as I could have. I feel like there's decks I see where I'm like, do you have Rhythm of the Wild in there? Yeah. And they still have one of the old, you know, like you said, Fires of Yavi or something.
Yeah, I actually did that with one of my Game Nights decks and didn't realize that Rhythm of the Wild was in existence. Should totally would have put that one instead.
I got mine.
Okay, I think I got mine too.
3, 2, 1. Savin's
Reclamation.
Reversal.
Oh. Right. Just because white, it's white similar. It's the same as the Smothering Tide argument.
Right, white needs the help.
Maybe it's not so under the radar then.
If you're not playing Narset's Reversal,
you should
be. It's crazy.
Just try it.
And just try it.
Just, you know, even if it's not the most, even if it's not expropriate level, just watch what happens when you play it.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about our final category here, which is the most wholesome stories of the year from Magic the Gathering. This is a good note to end on. I like it.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice and happy and warm and fuzzy. And the first one comes from artist Chris Ron, who is the artist behind Charmed Stray, which is just that cute little one-mana cat. And he was posting this, I believe, on Instagram. And here's the quote. Last year, I lost my cat, Willow, after 17 years. I adopted her halfway through my first year of art school, and she was the first pet I had on my own. She saw me through everything. Art school, graduation, getting my career off the ground, breakups, you name it. Needless to say, it was hard to let her go. A couple of months later, I got a tentative email from Don Mirren asking if I'd be interested in an assignment that would include her in MTG. They already had a cat card planned, and I jumped at the chance. When the assignment came in, it had been tailored to match Willow exactly. Painting it was a lot of fun and helped me get over it. Anyway, that's the winding path that got my old girl into War of the Spark. And if you look at a picture of Willow and a picture of the art, it's the same cat. That's so sweet.
Really cool. And cool that, you know, Wizards, like, they knew about it. And yeah. They were like, oh, here's a chance to do something and we should do it.
Imagine getting the brief and it's just like, this is my cat.
Yeah.
They wrote this because they knew about Willow. That's...
It's really cool.
Very rewarding.
They are good about that kind of thing. Like, Prof got the Tolarian Scholar as his preview card. Our friend Alex Kessler got Kess, Dissident Mage.
Dissident Mage, yeah.
Yeah, when it's on their radar and they think of it, you know, they're happy to do that kind of stuff, which is really cool.
Yeah. I like this next one.
All right, the next one is the Magic Spin Down Dice finally achieved perfection this year because the core set was 2020, which means that the top of the dice actually says 20 on it.
Yep, instead of a set symbol or M19, which was really tilting. I was like, what? Is this a 20?
There's two 19s on this dice.
Oh gosh, it's an 18, it's a 17. But now finally, core 2020, it's the time. We did it. Magic.
I never would have thought of this.
Magic can just end now, as far as I'm concerned.
Hey.
I'm just kidding. This next one's from Huey Jensen, and he's remembering his grandfather. And this
he's
is
an MPL
Twitter.
And Hall of Famer.
He wrote, found out at my grandpa's funeral during the eulogy that when he died, they found a small piece of paper in his wallet with Magic the Gathering written on it. My grandma wrote it for him so he could remember the name of the game I played to brag about me, despite the Alzheimer's.
Oh,
that's really sweet.
That's very sweet.
If I did that for my dad, he would still not know, because every time he asks me about what I do, he's like, that card game. He's still talking about that card.
What's that card game called again? That's what every family gathering is like for me. It's first of all, it's like, what is that? What's the game that you talk about? Magic the Gathering. Right. What do you do again? I make videos on YouTube. How do you make money?
How does this work?
Those are the three questions. And by the way, the person asking me, I've answered those three questions for them at least 9 times. And then the next uncle comes up and asks the same thing.
Or like from across the room, hey Josh.
What's the name of that game?
What's that thing you're playing? Your niece wants, okay, yeah. Do you know
how do you make any money?
And
it's fine. They're just worried that I, you know, make sure that I get enough to eat, which clearly if they just looked at me, they would know I do.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. And the final feel-good story of the year involves us. We did a very special episode of the podcast and an episode of Extra Turns where we had Evan Moss from the Make-A-Wish Foundation who came to visit us. And it was really humbling to have Evan request as his wish through the Make-A-Wish Foundation to be in our content, to come play Magic with us and meet us. And
they can ask for anything.
I mean, they're like Chris Evans is doing,
yeah.
You know, these or you know,
John Cena.
Yeah, John Cena does millions of them. Mark Rosewater also showed up as a surprise to Evan because Evan had said, I want to meet you guys. I want to play with you guys. And if Mark Rosewater could come, that'd be great, too.
Yeah.
And we contacted Wizards and Mark was great about like adding an extra day to a trip he was already taking. And we managed to make the scheduling work. And that is an episode of our podcast that you can check out. It'll be linked in the show notes. There's also an Extra Turns. Also will be linked in the show notes. Evan, just a real inspiration and a really great kid.
Really great kid. And, you know, he's starting his own magic club at his own school. He's, you know, facilitating bringing the love of the game to other people, which is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, really smart kid, too. Has published books and done TED Talks. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, really crazy.
And it was a great experience for us. So I hope it was a great experience for Evan.
I'm pretty sure it was. I hope so. Evan, to the listeners, let us know, Evan, did you have a good time? All right. But this is now the time to go to the listeners for the final time in 2019. So let us know, what are your favorite episodes that we've done? And what are the things that you remember that we've done in the past year, as well as the things that, you know, you think are memorable, or the, do you agree with our best cards list?
What was the coolest thing you think that happened in Magic this year?
Yeah.
Or what was the uncoolest thing?
Yeah. This is the year in review. So if you have anything to review, go for it. Maybe it's even your own personal review.
Yeah.
Did I get better? Do I want to keep playing? What brought me into the Commander now instead of Limited? Who knows?
Very, very cool. And if you would like to get your hands on any of the cards we've talked about this episode, maybe you want to pick up Narset's Reversal, Savine's Reclamation.
Mm-hmm.
Reclamation?
Reclamation.
There's two cards with Reclamation in it. I just realized. Wilderness Reclamation. If you want to pick that up, any of those, cardkingdom.com/command zone. Sorry, I got distracted. I was like, did I get that right? The Reclamations? You probably want to pick up some of this stuff because you're going to want to put it in your decks. And if you're like us, you have always meant to. You just haven't done it yet. You forgot Rhythm of the Wild existed. So
yes,
cardkingdom.com/command zone. You can get that stuff. You can order it. They will ship it to you faster than anybody else. You'll have it in your hands before you know it.
And you can have it for the new year.
Yeah.
Not to mention, you can also trade in cards that you're done playing with to get store credit.
Yep.
Like your Narset Parter Veils. Just get rid of them.
Yeah. You don't want those.
You don't want those. No.
Don't cast those.
No. No thanks.
Definitely don't cast Windfall after you cast that.
And while you're shopping at Ultra Pro, or maybe you're at the big box retailer and you see some of this product out there, Ultra Pro, big sponsor of the show as well. And we're so very grateful to them for now sponsoring almost all of our content. And you know what? I don't think I've ever played Magic now in like the past 3 years without some version of an Ultra Pro product being a part of it, and it's just made the general experience so much better. Just to have the dice, to have everything that you need and not have to worry about, and not have to worry about your cards getting scuffed up or not having a playmat to play on. Ultra Pro does the best stuff in the business.
Yeah, they really will protect all of your cards. All right, now it's time for the end step, the final end step of the year. Where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic.
Are you vamping because you have one?
I'm vamping because I want you to come up with something.
Oh, boy. So much to talk about. So much to see.
You know,
so
I got one.
Oh, thank goodness.
So I recently started watching on Netflix. They have this series of Marvel TV series.
Oh, like Runaways?
And it was Daredevil.
Right.
And
Jessica Jones.
The Defenders ones. Jessica Jones. Luke Cage. Those are the the three I watched, and then I watched The Defenders. Yeah, I kind of enjoyed them. That's it.
Oh, there's also the punchy one.
Oh, yeah, Iron Fist. I didn't watch that one.
Nah, we just call it the punchy one because I don't want to talk about it by name.
Yeah. But
you liked it, though, Defenders?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know a lot about that Marvel property that much. I mean, I know Daredevil, Elektra, Kingpin. Like those,
right.
Like, those are in the zeitgeist, you know, but I didn't know a ton, and so it was fun to, you know, I don't know. I was just watching them because they were a series of superhero shows, and you know, I was just kind of interested how they tried to do this and pull it off. And all those, they don't do the shows anymore. They kind of wrapped up the storylines, and they're not ongoing. But yeah, that was something that I just watched recently that I did kind of enjoy.
Jessica Jones, still one of my favorite villains in the history of Marvel, which is played by David Tennant. It's really, really good.
Oh, the first season. Kilgrave.
Yeah.
Kilgrave. David Tennant is so good.
He's just
really
good.
That he's in.
You know, Watchmen also recently finished, and if you have HBO now and you enjoy the Watchmen series, this is, I think, my favorite show of the year.
I'm four episodes in, see, I could watch the Daredevil stuff by myself.
Right.
But I have to wait for my girlfriend to finish Watchmen, so we haven't quite got there yet.
Watchmen.
But I like it a lot.
It's great.
Speaking of David Tennant, Good Omen.
Omens. That's right. Yeah, Good Omens.
Was on Amazon Prime, or is on Amazon Prime. Another series. I love that book, and another series that's pretty good.
Didn't know it was a book.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out as well. Plenty of time to do that over the holidays, right?
There you go, while you're traveling and whatnot. That's like three end steps in one. Look at the value.
How was our end steps this year? Year interview, best end step. This one. We
this
did three.
One. Boom. Killed it. Mic drop. We're out. Before we go, though, we got to talk about our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman, they make a podcast about the modern format, pretty obvious, and all things competitive Magic.
They're talking about Pioneer a lot, too, now, right?
Yeah, probably true. They do a really good show. Actually, this isn't in the notes, but this is going to be probably the final episode where we announce them as our sister podcast. We still love those guys, and we hope that their show does really, really well. But we're just making some changes around here, so the sister podcast thing, you probably won't hear us talk about them anymore. But
they're
that
simply
doesn't mean,
a podcast now.
That doesn't mean you shouldn't listen to them, though. Their podcast is still really, really great. If you're interested in Modern, Pioneer, all that stuff, you can find them at the MMCast on Twitter or all of your podcast apps. Just type in The Masters of Modern, also on YouTube.
And a big, big shout out to them. Alex Kessler has been a part of my life now for 7-8 years.
Yep.
Glenn Jones, the original co-host.
Works at Wizards.
We've been talking to him for just as long. Ben Bateman, I've known him for a long, long time as well. I've worked up with him on a bunch of different stuff. So yeah, big shout out to those guys as always.
Yeah, keep listening to their show, even though we don't necessarily call them out every episode from now on.
Yes. Do send some happy holiday kudos to our editing, graphics, and logistics team, because the Command Zone family is growing and it is filled with amazing people like Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Alfred Estaca, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, and Sam Waldo.
Hopefully there's a picture from the last game nights I hope they put on screen.
Oh,
right,
yeah,
there.
Good call.
Because everybody's just so
picture.
Cute. All right.
Indeed.
And special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who does the Living Cards animations that start and begin every episode of this show, as well as sit behind us in the windows back there. You can find Jeffrey on Twitter at LivingCardsMTG.
All right, that is it. This is the final paper toss of 2019. You get two final paper tosses.
We made it.
Very
we did
nice.
It.
Very nice. We did do it. Good job, Josh. High five.
Good job, everybody out there. Thanks for sticking with us this year, and we will see you in 2020.
Heck yeah. Bye-bye.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
3 has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.